welcome to First Things First on this Christmas Eve morning. I'm Jenna Wolf. That is Nick Wright. This right here is Chris Broussard joining us this morning. Thank you so much for being with us this week.
It is always a pleasure to be here.
Merry Christmas always. Eve,
yes.
Merry Christmas, Merry Christmas to you. Eve. You're looking dapper, Mr.
Thank
Nick
you very
Wright.
Much. Appreciate that.
We got a big Christmas Eve show for you today, and we are going to start off with the gift of Monday Night Football. And it was a good one last night. Packers in Minnesota. Green Bay would run away with this one, literally. Aaron Jones at 154 yards on the ground to go along with two scores. And Green Bay's defense would do the rest, sacking Kirk Cousins five times, intercepting him once. Go figure, it was on a big stage, and Kirk Cousins somehow came up just a little bit short. Packers win 23-10. They clinch the NFC North. Here is Aaron Rodgers after the big road win.
That's really sweet, you know, to celebrate in the locker room with those guys. A lot of guys, you know, weren't here in 16 the last time we got to put these hats on. That was a sweet run, you know, winning six in a row to finish it off in Detroit. But there's really nothing like checking that first box and, you know, on the goal list to win your division. Obviously secures a home playoff game, and now we're playing for even more coming up next week.
So, Nick, the Packers win another game where Aaron Rodgers wasn't the star of the game. Not sure whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, and we can debate that. Do they need Aaron Rodgers to be better if they want to make a Super Bowl run?
If they're going to win the Super Bowl, and before the year I picked them to get to the Super Bowl via the one seed, and right now if they win and the Seahawks upset the Niners, the Packers will be the one seed. What they need is three wins, and to get those three wins, they need Rodgers to be spectacular once. I don't know that they can survive a terrible Aaron Rodgers game, but Aaron Rodgers really only been terrible once all season. Because they are going to have a bye, I believe, because I think they're going to win next week.
Yep.
Because they are going to have at least one, if not both, of their playoff games en route to the Super Bowl in Green Bay, and because of the path and the overall quality of their total team as shown last night with the Smith brothers once again playing great. They both have now more than a dozen sacks on the season. I don't think you need Aaron Rodgers to be spectacular in every round of the playoffs. In fact, the year they won the Super Bowl, when Rodgers was really announcing himself as one of the very best players in the entire league, the conference championship game that year, if I remember correctly, against the Bears, he had no touchdowns and an interception, and they won that game, and they went to the Super Bowl. So I don't think this team is like the 2015 Broncos, where Peyton Manning was really, at that point, just someone along for the ride. They need Rodgers to be good throughout the playoffs and great at least once in the playoffs, but I do not think they need Aaron Rodgers to go three touchdowns, no picks, 330 yards every single game for them to have a chance. I think they've shown that throughout the season where they're 12-3, and I would argue he's only had three monster games all year. Oakland, Kansas City, and the Giants, they've shown the ability to beat good football teams like the Vikings twice this year, with Rodgers having a good first game and a mediocre to poor second game, and they still handed the Vikings two of their five losses of the year.
I actually agree with you. I don't think he has to be spectacular all the way through, but he's going to need a game, maybe two, to get them to the Super Bowl, to win it for sure. He's going to have a spectacular game. Because, look, while the running game and the defense are very much improved, we're not talking about historically great running games and defense. I mean, Aaron Jones didn't even make the Pro Bowl. We can argue that he should have, but he didn't. The defense isn't even one of the top five defenses in the league. So when you look at who they have to go through, sure, they can beat Minnesota. They can beat whoever wins the NFC East without Rodgers being spectacular. Can they beat a San Francisco without, or New Orleans without it? Because I don't think their defense can hold those offenses down enough where Rodgers can just be okay and they can win. I mean, New Orleans put up 46 points on San Francisco's defense.
Yep.
You know, so San Francisco obviously smashed Green Bay during the regular season, 37-9, I believe it was. So he's going to have a big game to beat one of those two teams. And then, if you face Kansas City or Baltimore in the Super Bowl, they're going to have to put up points. It's just as simple as that. I mean, Kansas City put up 24 on them on Green Bay with Matt Moore as the quarterback. And Baltimore, obviously the best rush game in the league. Green Bay is like 23rd against the rush in the NFL. Yeah. So I think they're going to need Rodgers to put up some points and be Aaron Rodgers at least once or twice.
I agree with you that there's going to be a moment. But I think what makes this Packers team different, the reason I think a lot of people were so optimistic about them, is because you don't need it every single week. Last year's Patriots, who won the Super Bowl, Brady was sensational in the first round. In the second round, he had a sensational final drive and a half, but he was actually pretty poor the first 3.5 quarters. And in the Super Bowl, they won scoring one touchdown. I think the Peyton Manning example, I think we have, it has been a while since we've had an instance where a quarterback just had to put his team on his shoulders in order to win the Super Bowl. Hell, you could argue Joe Flacco is one an instance where it happened, where he had the 11 touchdowns, zero picks. I don't think the Packers are built that way, and so much of it will have to do with the path. If Seattle beats San Francisco and Green Bay gets the one seed, I don't think you need Aaron Rodgers to be spectacular to beat Seattle in Lambeau. Yeah, I do think you're going to need him to be spectacular if you're going to beat New Orleans in Lambeau, for example. So I think it really depends on how the bracket falls in that regard.
So let's just take a step back for a second. Nick had the Packers coming out of the NFC. I don't know if you did or not. No, you did.
And I don't want to say who I had.
Earlier on in the season, it looked a little shaky with the way they were playing, and they seem to have put it all together in the last couple of weeks. What do you credit their turnaround to?
Well, look, obviously the defense, you mentioned the Smiths, and I mean, their defense is much better, and that's something they haven't been able to count on. And then the running game. I mean, Aaron Rodgers, you never thought you'd say this, at least not for the next 5 years or so. He's been a game manager this year. Mm-hmm. I credit him for submitting to the system, because last year and the years before,
really submitting to Matt LaFleur.
And his system. I mean, but he's staying in the pocket. He's making the easy passes, which is something he got criticized for. He was always trying to be Superman and Super, and sometimes he had to. But I just picture him so much running outside of the pocket, making magic where nothing existed. And last night was a great example of how he just took what came to him and should have had a touchdown. Devontae Adams dropped one in the end zone. So, but here's the thing with Rodgers, and I'm not going to say that he's not the same. Like you said, the team has changed. They don't need him to do that. But his last 7 games, he's averaging 193 yards a game. He has 8 touchdowns in those 7 games, and that includes a 4 touchdown game against the Giants. So you're talking about 6 games where he had 4 touchdowns. Doesn't throw the picks, obviously, other than, you know, he had one last night. But it's odd seeing him be a game manager, and I think he's going to have one Aaron Rodgers
game
to get them to the Super Bowl.
He's going to have to play better at a point in this postseason than he's played over the breadth of the season. But it does speak to his overall greatness that a down year, and I think this is a down year for Rodgers, is right. He's on pace for 4,000 yards, 24 touchdowns, 3 picks, and a passer rating just below 100. But it speaks to the quality of the team. I don't think they got off to a slow start. They started 3-1 with a loss to Philly. They then won 4 in a row. They have one bad loss on the year at the Chargers, and that was something where they maybe had some travel issues in how they got there. San Francisco was the game that I was about to mention. San Francisco was the game in San Francisco that I thought they looked the worst, and I thought that was their one really poor performance. The Chargers was a letdown against a bad football team. The Niners, that is a concern. As far as for my Super Bowl pick to be correct, I think they might have to avoid San Francisco. I think that might just be a mismatch as far as San Francisco's front against the Packers' offensive line, what one team does well versus the other. But this is what Aaron Rodgers wanted. He wanted a coach that put the team in position to where he did not have to do everything. Right. He has held up his end of it. If they win next week, they are 13-3 and have a bye for only the third time in the entire Aaron Rodgers era, which is remarkable. And they're in great position to make it to their second Super Bowl with Aaron Rodgers.
All right, Packers beat the Vikings, pick up their first division title since 2016. Let's go back to the Cowboys. Dak Prescott, he's going to finish the season with career highs in passing yards and touchdowns. Unfortunately, the Dallas quarterback will most likely also finish the season just like my guy Nick here, watching the playoffs from the couch.
Confirmed.
Now the question is whether Dak deserves to be the highest paid quarterback in the league. Cowboys CEO Stephen Jones is ready to go all in on Dak.
And we have all the confidence in the world in Dak. We've never blinked on that. And, you know, we've had a very aggressive offer out there every step of the way. And we certainly understood that if he stepped it up, which, you know, I think Dak has given us every opportunity to have success. I'm as bullish about Dak as I've ever been.
And yet they might not make the playoffs. They probably won't make the playoffs at 7-8 at this point in the season. Nick, what do you think? Should the Cowboys pay Dak the $35 to $40 million per year he's rumored to make?
Jen, I don't mean to question your read at all. Was that Stephen Jones or Dak's agent?
That was Stephen Jones.
Okay.
That was Jerry Jones.
Are we sure that wasn't Dak's agent?
I know.
I don't know what these guys are doing. I don't know how they've... My God, one day I'd love to be on the other side of the negotiation with the Dallas Cowboys. I mean, you're making my case for me. We've made very aggressive offer to Dak, and he's had every opportunity to prove he's worth more, and I think he's... He almost said it.
I know.
He stopped himself. He's like, and I think he's at every step of the way put us in position. Well, thanks. More money now. The Cowboys are going to make Dak Prescott one of the three highest paid quarterbacks in the history of pro football, and it is going to be a massive mistake.
Mm.
There is, we can see the history of this, which is paying guys that you know are good, but not great because you think you have to, and it never works out well.
For fear what, that you'll lose them?
The thing is this, they don't even, because of the franchise tag, you don't even have any credible fear you would lose him for a minimum of two seasons. But for fear of setting a bad precedent, not showing faith in him with the locker room, some odd, I don't know. I don't know why the Rams said at the last moment, there's all the money, Jared Goff, when they had no reason to. I don't know why teams seem to be in a hurry to pay guys before they have to at this one position when every other position has to sing for their supper, hold out, beg and plead for every last dollar. I know it's the most important position, but Dak Prescott is not going anywhere. You have the franchise tag to hold over his head, and the fact that you are going to pay him, I believe, north of $35 million a year when you couldn't compete for a championship when he was making south of $5 million a year is a massive, massive mistake.
It is what the NFL is. He is going to be one of the top three paid quarterbacks in the league. Is he one of the top three quarterbacks?
No,
not even close. But was Kirk Cousins? No. Was Matthew Stafford, Matt Ryan, Carson Wentz? No, it's the way the NFL is. And I think in that $35 million area, I would pay him. Now, if he wants 40, and maybe that's why they haven't signed anything to thus far, then I would franchise him. I would not pay him 40. But let's face it, if they give him $35 million a year, in 4 years, where's that going to be? He's not going to be in the top three anymore in 4 years. He may not be in the top six in 4 years.
But he might not be, and he certainly won't be one of the three best, and he certainly won't be one of the six best. And just real quick, Broussard, you just mentioned guys. I think you said Matt Stafford, Kirk Cousins,
Matt Ryan.
Carson Wentz, Matt Ryan. You know what all those teams have in common? None of them got a shot at winning the Super Bowl this year.
Well, most of
Matt
them
Ryan
the was in the Super Bowl
before he got this huge deal.
Carson Wentz, though, people think, I mean, this is a guy, you're right. Obviously, before he got the deal, he led them to an 11-2 record.
Yep.
But he's a guy people think can get them to a Super Bowl eventually. I think, look, it's hard to find a franchise quarterback. How much longer do they want to? If they get rid of him, who knows when the next time they could get a franchise quarterback? This is a guy, you know, he's a leader. I don't want to go through all the things I did yesterday, but he's, you know, the teammates love him. He can be the face of your franchise. You know, he has all the intangibles, and he's not bad. Look, he's 39-24 as a starter. Now, you want to shake your head, poo-poo that. Only Russell Wilson and Tom Brady have better records records as starters since he's been in the league. Russell Wilson and Tom Brady, and that six games without Ezekiel a few years ago with the suspension, and then that's this 7-8 season, and yet he's still third in wins. So I just think, look, statistically, you can look at the numbers. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not even going to highlight the yardage where he's second in the league in yards, because that's kind of an archaic way yep. of judging somebody's season. But he is fourth in yards per attempt,
which is an important stat.
He's tied for fifth in touchdowns,
yep.
and he's fourth in QBR. So I think this is a guy, this is your quarterback. You just have to make sure you get the pieces.
But what's more important, all those numbers and personal statistics, or getting your team to the playoffs in games that you should be winning, in winnable games?
So I'm going to go option C, because I'm not a quarterback wins stat guy. And it's not fair this year to say, well, Dak doesn't have the wins, but he has the stats. When in previous years, I was saying, because I want to stay consistent, I know he's got a bunch of wins, but look at the numbers, look at his lack of it. To me, you are making the case that so many NFL teams do, which is, what's the alternative? The deal won't age that poorly down the road. When to me, it is this simple. Let's call it $36 million, just for simplicity's sake, okay? Because that would set the new market. It wouldn't be 40. It's probably around where the deal is. The question is Dak Prescott worth three Pro Bowl level players at other positions? Because $12 million a year gets you the best running back in football, get you a good wide receiver, get you an excellent corner, pick the position. A $12 million a year will get you the top of the market for basically anything other than pass rusher, the very, very best wide receivers, and a couple other guys, left tackle, right? Dak is not. Russell Wilson, yes. Aaron Rodgers, yes. Drew Brees, yes. Brady up until this year, even though he didn't take the money, yes. Next year, Deshaun Watson, sign me up. Patrick Mahomes, 3.5 players, no problem. But the other guys who've gotten this type of money, it scaled to when they got it, whether it's Matt Stafford, whether it's Matt Ryan, whether it's Jared Goff right now, what we've seen is they might be worth 1.5 of those players, and they cannot make up the spread. And so what do you do with Dak? To me, the Cowboys
just
clearly won't.
Franchise him.
Yeah, I would have offered Dak 27, the Kirk Cousins per year deal, not fully guaranteed. And if you don't want it, Dak, you know what? You got $26 million coming to you next year via the franchise tag, $31 million the year after, and I would do the non-exclusive franchise tag, which means if another team wants him, they can come get him and give me two first-round picks, because I can build my team more smartly that way. Because if this team this year, Broussard, isn't talented enough to even make the playoffs, much less the Super Bowl, what's it going to be when you have to start paring away the roster because your quarterback gets a $30 million per year raise?
But that's the point. You mentioned running back. We got our running back. And if Zeke falls off, we got Tony Pollard
sure.
for a few years. You know, we signed up a lot of players on the defense. We already gave them the contracts. Amari Cooper was disappointing in the game mm-hmm. Sunday, but they'll probably bring him back maybe at a discounted rate. So a lot of those positions are already filled. And I think you said if they're not talented enough. I think they are talented enough if they get the right coach in there. I think this is a team that can compete with the top teams in the NFC.
Nick, what's the best thing about Christmas?
The NBA, unofficial
guy,
opening of the
LeBron,
NBA season.
Kawhi, yeah, sure. Here we go. Yep. The NBA gifting its fans the most anticipated matchup of the season on Christmas Day. Kawhi and the Clippers, LeBron and the Lakers. So the Claws rested. He should play. The King is questionable with a back injury. He's expected
play.
To play.
He's
going to
play.
Don't look for a gift exchange before the game between these two. An executive describing the relationship as tepid. Quote, I would say there's mutual respect, but that there's an appropriate level of fear as well. They know each other really well, or talented, but there's not a lot of admiration. I don't see them going out for dinner. Broussard, you mind that there's a, quote, level of fear in the LeBron-Kawhi rivalry?
I think that was a great quote. I didn't agree with the level of admiration. I do think he said that when he said there's mutual respect. I think he kind of contradicted himself. I do think they admire each other, but yeah, they do respect each other. If LeBron didn't respect Kawhi, he wouldn't have recruited him the way he did. if Kawhi didn't respect LeBron, he would not have considered going to the Lakers. And if the Clippers don't pull that rabbit out of the hat and get Paul George, I do think Kawhi, just to get to Southern California, would have gone to the Lakers. Now, the fear, that's the big question. Obviously, Kawhi respects and I would say fear knows what LeBron can do. When Kawhi was the MVP finals in 2014, he guarded LeBron, and that's why he got it. LeBron averaged 28, 8 rebounds, 4 assists on 57% shooting, 52% from 3.
You said 28, 8, and 4 on 57 and 52.
Yes.
And Kawhi got the MVP because he held him to it.
Right.
Because Kawhi in that series, was he a monster scorer?
He averaged 17, I believe.
17.
Which for him
was a monster scorer.
Yeah, because he was only averaging 12, I believe,
right.
That season.
Two games in that series, he scored in single digits. He won the finals MVP.
It could have went to anybody. You're right.
LeBron once in an NBA final scored single digits in a game. It's the worst moment of his career. This was the best moment of Kawhi's. But go ahead, sorry.
I apologize. But here's the thing, Nick.
Didn't mean to interrupt.
This is a rivalry. This is becoming a rival. LeBron, Kawhi is maybe one of the few players that physically can match up with LeBron in terms of size and strength, mm-hmm. and athleticism. And anyone else, for the most part, who's been able to do it throughout LeBron's career, say a Ron Artest. Artest was a really good player on both ends, but he couldn't offensively do what Kawhi could do.
Andre Iguodala.
Okay, same thing.
Exactly.
Not as big and strong as LeBron. Yeah. Lance Stephenson, not as big and strong. And obviously, they're not. Mm-hmm. Kawhi is a different animal that LeBron hasn't had to see very much in his career. Now, the thing is appropriate fear. Of course, LeBron doesn't cower at Kawhi. And Kawhi certainly doesn't cower when he sees LeBron. However, there is a healthy fear that has Kawhi, obviously, he knows what LeBron can do. But on LeBron's part, there's a healthy fear that this guy can beat me. And I've got to bring my A game. It's the same type of healthy fear a LeBron would have with Boston in the Big Three and with San Antonio when they played him in the finals twice in Miami. I've got to bring my A game because this team or this guy is that good. And I think it's a healthy fear.
So I can't speak to the people's fear quotients. I think there is a level of anxiety that any real competitor has when you're up against another great competitor, another great team, and both of these teams have great competitors and both of them are excellent teams. I can speak to this idea that this is a rivalry. And this is not just an opinion, this is an informed opinion on this. There is almost nothing that's happened in the last decade in the NBA, aside from he feels snubbed on some MVPs and the Defensive Player of the Year award, that irritated LeBron more than the idea that Steph Curry was his equal or his rival. And you saw it. Brian Windhorst just talked about this at length on Bill Simmons' podcast. Thought he did a great job. And anyone that's close to even the tertiary people surrounding LeBron, you know this, I know this. You saw it come out in those 2016 NBA Finals, those couple of blocks on Steph, where he kind of mean-mugged him,
right.
Shrugged his shoulders, was like, get out of here. I've been the best player for a decade. Everyone now says I'm old and busted. You're young hotness. Not happening. There's a little bit of that same thing going on right now from LeBron towards Kawhi, which is, wait, what? If this was LeBron, Kevin Durant, it's different. LeBron has looked at Kevin Durant not as his equal, but as the closest thing in the world to it.
Okay.
Would you agree?
Yes, but I think you're underestimating how good Kawhi is. Go ahead.
And I think LeBron also sees Giannis coming.
Right.
And Giannis a decade younger, and they haven't had the battles.
They won't be rivals because he's
so
young.
Too much of an age discrepancy. LeBron rightfully looks at it and says, okay, so it's a rivalry. When in either of our lives has this guy been on the same plane as me, much less better than me? The answer is last year when LeBron was hurt. And so the idea that all of a sudden there is going that Kawhi Leonard is a player that LeBron looks at as his rival or someone to fear, I think that irritates LeBron in a way the Steph Curry stuff did. I think you'll see some of that on Christmas. I'd love to say you'll get to see when they guard each other, but these days Kawhi doesn't guard the opposing team's best player. So he'll,
and LeBron's
he'll
not going to guard
Danny
him
Green.
Either.
I think
maybe
you'll see
every
some
blue,
of it.
Occasionally, right. And if they meet in the playoffs, I think at late in games you may see them matched up against each other. But I hope you're right. Because I want this, like I said, this should bring out the best in LeBron. And obviously, Kawhi Leonard is not as good of a player as LeBron historically. But right now.
He's not.
Right, hold on. He doesn't control a game like LeBron. But he does have something LeBron doesn't have, which he knows I can get to certain spots when it's time to get a bucket. I know if I get to this spot, I'm hitting this mid-range jumper in the middle of the lane on different sides of the paint, and it's money. 70% of the time, I'm going to hit it. LeBron doesn't have that go-to move. As great as he is, he doesn't have that, other than it's just going to be a drive to the basket. Kawhi, when people compare him to Michael Jordan, obviously he's not as good as Jordan. But his game is
stylistically.
He doesn't over-dribble, doesn't dominate the ball. Two-dribble pull-up, mid-range stuff, great on both ends. He is an appropriate foe for LeBron at this stage of LeBron's
There's
career.
Not just a small part of this at the beginning of the season that LeBron was like, come play with me, and Kawhi was like, no, let's play, not with you, I'm going to play against
let's
you.
Let's see how it works out for him.
I am glad he did that, though.
Yeah,
isn't it better for the league?
It's great for the league.
All right, Broussard, let's play a little in or out. One day after losing running backs Chris Carson and C.J. Procise to injury, Seattle went beast mode, signing 33-year-old Marshawn Lynch. Broussard, you in or out on Marshawn being a legitimate option for the Seahawks?
I'm in just because it gives us an opportunity to see this highlight again. I mean, that's arguably the greatest run in NBA, in NFL history.
Oh, I love it.
Just saying.
Coach gonna
like,
love that take.
Not for significance. Mm-hmm. But just the fact, I mean, how many guys did he run over? But anyway, I'm in on it. C.J. Anderson came back off the couch last year and helped the Rams. Why can't Beast Mode do it?
Yeah, I'm in on it because he's been productive. The last 2 years that he's played, he's still been over 4 yards a carry, which is amazing considering his age and the challenges that he's had. Now, what's he been doing up to this point? Typically bringing an older guy the last week of the season isn't a formula for success, but there's not many options, and hopefully he can give him some kind of consistency or at least contribution through the playoffs.
I've got no analysis here. He probably won't work, but I'm in because I want him to work. I'm rooting for him. This is heart over head here. 33-year-old running backs who've been retired twice now usually is not the fountain you go to, but they have no other option. I like Marshawn finishing his career as a Seahawk anyway. And what do they need from him? Like one good game for it to be worth it? I'm in.
All right, moving on. Let's talk some Panthers. They reportedly interviewed Mike McCarthy for their head coaching vacancy. McCarthy helped lead Aaron Rodgers to a Super Bowl 45 win. Broussard, you in or out on McCarthy being a good fit with Cam Newton and the Panthers?
I mean, I'm in. I think he's obviously been a good coach. And I think this, there are stories about him really getting more into studying the analytics in the offseason. He's probably looked at a lot of the new offenses and, creative ways guys are doing things now that he's been off. So I think it's certainly worth a shot. I mean, I wouldn't be mad at that move if they go with McCarthy. I'm in.
Yeah, look, I'm in as much as you can be in at this point with any decision. You don't know where Cam Newton is going to be. You don't know what he's going to be like, when he comes back. If you want a veteran head coach, you've got an opportunity to go get one who's had a history of success, and he's on the offensive side, so that plays well to at least making that decision at quarterback and making that informed decision at quarterback.
I'm out for two reasons. One is, if you wanted an established veteran, kind of hard-nosed head coach, you had one in Ron Rivera, and you got rid of him. Secondarily, I think sometimes you learn a little bit about someone when they leave a place and how that place looks after they leave. Green Bay's never looked better from a team standpoint, certainly better than they have over the last 4 or 5 years. So for those reasons, I'm out on Mike McCarthy in Carolina.
All right, let's move on to the Dallas Cowboys. Even though Dallas is on the verge of missing the playoffs, CEO Stephen Jones is already ready to go all in on Prescott, saying, quote, I'm as bullish on Dak as I've ever been.
Of course you are.
So, Broussard, hard. You in or out on the Cowboys making Dak the highest paid quarterback in the league?
I wouldn't want to make him the highest, but that's the way it goes. That's the way the market is. So he won't be the highest in 4 years. So I would do this. I'm in on it. And by the way, since he's come into the league, he has more wins as a starter than any quarterback other than Russell Wilson and Tom Brady. That's pretty good.
And Chris's point is the most valid point. You have to pay what the market is. And if you believe that this is your guy moving forward, then you're going to have to pay market price. Do I necessarily believe it? No. And I think this is the problem. When the owner is also the GM, the person who picks the players is going to believe that the players are the reason for your success, and that if there is failure, it's the coach's fault. So it's a skewed evaluation. And as long as he's bullish, then Dak's going to be really happy.
When these quarterback contracts come up, when the analysis is, it's the market, he was next in line, it's the price of doing business, those are all just different ways of saying, is a bad deal that the team's going to regret. Nobody said it. When Russell Wilson got his deal, no one's like, well, it's the price of doing business. They're like, damn, Seattle locked up Russell Wilson. It's awesome. Same with Aaron Rodgers. Same with Drew Brees' last few deals. I'm out on this. The Cowboys are going to do this, and they're going to regret it. They are going to be worse off because they're going to have to pair off talent from their roster to find the $35 million a year for Dak Prescott. I said it when Goff got his deal. We've said it with many other deals that have proven to be correct. No, the Cowboys shouldn't do it. They, of course, will.
But Nick, it's easy to say that, but you need alternatives. And when you don't have an alternative, this has been a very successful player in this system. And without a viable alternative, then you may be able to go get other quality players. But again, you got to be able to identify those quality players as well.
So I got him in the franchise tag, my friend. Franchise tag him and see what he does next year. See if he'll be better.
It wasn't good enough for Odell, but it's good enough for Dak.
Dak is not as good of a player as Odell. That is obviously.
Hey, he's had a better year.
We got a little bit later.
You have to admit that.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern.